How many hours a day do you commit to social media?
Probably like at least 20 hours a week.
Out of those 20 hours, how many leads do you get per week from your social media?
I'd say
on average.
On average, yeah, it's at least 5 to 10 per week.
5 to 10 a week.
Yeah.
Jose, that's a lot. So it makes the 20 hours like quite worth it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. At this point, yeah. Yeah. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to Under All is the Land, Season 3, Episode 7. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Well, hello.
I'm your host, Courtney Polis, here with my rock star co-stars, Silke Fernald.
Hi.
And Dominique Madden.
Hello.
Hello. How's it been going? How's the market? Buyers are back?
Great. Buyers are back.
Yes.
Things are happening.
Awesome.
Multiple offers everywhere. It's good.
Yeah.
The market is good.
I love it.
I think
to
we
see
reached
it.
That dip that everybody's talking about. It's behind us.
Yeah. Yeah. The dip is
that
called
was,
Christmas.
That
and it happens
December
every year.
Exactly.
I mean, I agree.
Every
exactly
year they do the same thing. I'm like, wow, the news really needs to create a crisis out of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Every year.
Every
single year.
Thing. Every year.
But there's also this crisis of the interest rates and the recession.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And that dip is what I'm talking about. That dip's over too.
I know.
It
but
fell
that
into
dip
the same
Christmas.
Christmas. Yes. Yes.
But I feel like there's always something that happens around Christmas. The only exception was COVID year. But every Christmas, the news media and people seem so surprised. And I tell my clients, like, this is the time to buy. And they are so, like, afraid of the slowdown and lack of inventory that not everybody takes advantage of it. And then by the time they're ready again in February, buyers are back.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. I swear to God. You know, it's funny because we kept saying, take advantage, get in the market. Now's the time to get a deal, you know? And literally now everybody's coming back searching for the deal. I'm like, we have multiple offers. There's no more deal.
So the New York Times won again. New York Times and LA Times and all the magazines and newspapers that published all the skies falling stuff, they won over us because we kept telling our clients, deals are happening, don't believe the headlines. Oh no, we're waiting. Well, now you're back and multiple offers everywhere. So
no, people should listen.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Well, sure. They should listen to the people on the ground.
Exactly.
That's right.
In your hyper local market, not in the people who are speaking broadly, they can't speak to what's happening here.
Yeah.
Like what's happening, for example, right now in Ohio, I'm sure real estate is shit.
Why would
because
you say that?
It's gone nuclear, you know? But here in LA, we're clear, our air is clean,
the sun is shining.
The
living is easy.
It's not funny. That's not funny.
No.
But you know what I mean.
No, but you know the reality of it is when CNN or a lot of like Bloomberg and these kind of things, they do news stories, they talk to new construction developers and economists. They do not talk to real estate agents who are in the field making deals who could put the market in context. And I always wonder why they don't do that. It's so frustrating to watch national news headlines.
Because they don't want real news.
They don't. They want to spin their narrative. And now we all know, like we've talked about before, Wall Street has an agenda. And frequently, if their Q4 objective is to acquire whole cities in America, they're going to make sure those prices go down so they can get a bigger return. And that's fucked up. But here's one thing I did notice. So I have a client who did listen to me and bought, you know, put an offer in while it was still like slow. This house had been on the market for like a long time, like many months, had a price reduction, busy street, but you know, not moving at the price it was listed at. So we made an offer expecting to negotiate. The sellers came back and countered at list price. I was like, okay, so you're not moving at all. And then we countered again. They came back. My buyer conceded. So we're at, like, we met in the middle plus a little to the seller, right? So it's fine. And I think, you know, totally justified. But we did our inspections. And the sellers are refusing to offer any credit on inspections. Nothing. And these are regular resellers. And I said to the agent, like, wow, nothing? Like, is this revenge of the sellers? Now, like the sellers are sick of the buyers' lowball offers. The sellers are sick of their house sitting on the market for these 2 months if they put it on November, December, May, January. And they're not grateful for the offers that they're getting. And they're not going to try and make it work. And so he said, well, actually, you know, after we accepted your offer, we got multiple other offers that were higher. I was like, which I'm not, I don't know if it's true or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was true.
You know what I think? I wish we could just stop with this sing and dance of like, we're overbidding, we're getting the house and we're going to get money back in inspections and just go to pre-inspection and ask a sales, end of story.
San like Francisco they do up style. North.
Exactly. Yeah. It would be just so much easier than we don't have to do this little dance of you like, know, expectation. We
can the only problem is that buyers don't understand how to interpret home inspections and it puts the onus on us to go through the reports with them. I'm not an inspector. Right. I'd rather have them have an inspector who's working for them give them the information.
Right. But this inspector can be called. So read the report. If there's questions, run it past inspector.
And
run it
past some your inspectors own inspector. Don't talk to anybody but the person who they paid.
Or maybe still have access to the property a certain amount of days for your own inspector. But we're not negotiating. There's no credits. There's nothing.
See, this is the issue that I see.
And just somehow figure out a little bit. It works up north.
Well, no, I think that that's actually a good strategy. And in the past, I feel like it's worked out really well for listings. Like when people are willing to do the pre-inspection. Mm-hmm. But there's also kind of conditions to that. Like if something does come up, are you willing to fix it? Or, you know, or accommodate for it somehow? Or are you just going to sell it as is? And are you willing to accommodate on the price for that? Mm-hmm. But also, are the sellers willing to pay for the inspections? Because that's what I run up on the most is like, you know, they don't want to pay for their own inspections, you know, mm-hmm. even though it would benefit them probably to know what is happening.
So that way, yeah. If it was customary and if it was just how it's done here, then they would.
Right, but they're so used to it not
like,
being.
You know how termite used to be seller pays whatever, no matter whatever. And now it's like, well, let's negotiate.
Yeah.
Or not in the case or of not. What I'm talking about.
Or not.
Yeah.
We had also, we're in a deal, I'm in another deal with, I'm not going to name the brokerage, but it's a big entity that is, I don't know. I don't see any consistency in the quality of the agents that are there. And I don't really understand how they give people titles. Mm. So like we're working with supposedly like a senior listing manager or something like that. And basically they didn't check for the utilities to be on at the property, which happens sometimes. Okay, I've been on the other side of that. But when we asked for the sellers to provide evidence, when the gas company comes to turn on gas, they usually test all the appliances and leave a like note. They'll turn it on if there's no leak, but if it's leaked, then they red tag it or something. They won't turn that appliance on. So he was like, we're under no obligation to prove to you that the appliances work. And I'm like, okay, you didn't have the gas on for inspection, which is contractual. It says the seller's supposed to have that on. And now you're not even willing to like share with us the document that the gas company leaves? Like, why? And he's like, I'm encouraging my sellers not to do that. I'm like, okay, you're trying to make the deal not work? Why would you do that? And then, so finally we worked it out and the gas company's supposed to come and turn it on. And he tells us, I'm going out of my way to go over to the property and make sure the gas is on. Like it's beyond the scope of his work. And I thought, God, Acme agents are there for every inspection, always available, never feel like anything is too much to do, you know, probably to a fault. And there are people just like skating through, acting like visiting the listing to make sure that they're performing contractually is like extra.
Is this one of those places where the agents are employed, salaried?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why they don't give a crap.
Right. And I'm like, do consumers know the level of representation that they're getting?
Yeah.
Because if the deal falls apart on this, because every little bad blood thing that happens can make a buyer sour on a deal.
Yeah.
But if, you know, and we're holding it together by like toothpick right now, like it's a house of cards that could fall down. I don't know, you know, but do they know, like, what's the story the seller's going to get when the buyer's like, God, obviously these sellers do not care. Meanwhile, the sellers could be sitting there going, we had no idea this was expected of us. Like, we didn't know that there was a problem. Like, who knows? Now, I think sometimes the consumers really don't know what level of representation. Nick and I were talking today. We got an offer with no cover letter, no agent cover letter, no, hi, Nick and Courtney, attached is the offer. Like, just, you know, sometimes
which is
you get
pretty common now.
It's like, people just like forward
just an art, just the attachment of the, oh, the forward dollar, that's like the best.
I mean, you know, it's like, I just expect so much more from our profession. I wasn't trained that way. And I see people doing business and I'm like, you know, sometimes you see agents who are doing millions and millions of dollars of business and they don't have any marketing material on site. And they're selling $2 million houses with no MLS printout. That's usually at least a bare minimum. No brochures, no marketing, anything. I'm like, do the sellers know that they're not, that there's no, nothing happening here? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's almost like,
I think sellers should go to their own open houses.
Yes.
One time.
Great
not
idea.
Not hang out there. Like, not.
Right. Just
but
walk
just
through.
Just walk see through how it's and going. See what's happening.
I think it's a terrible but great idea.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything to worry about. You don't have anything to worry about.
No,
neither
I don't.
You.
No, not for
so
me.
So come on
be
over.
Back, you know, and.
But I
secret shop.
But some people might have something to worry about.
Acne agents. I would do a secret shopper thing. I show up and everybody gets all
secret
nervous.
Shopper.
I love it. Yeah, I go in to make sure that they're doing the right thing. But you know, it's true. I think sellers should send like their neighbor or their best friend to go over there.
Yeah.
I don't know if consumers know what they're always getting, and I'm not sure how they could, but I think maybe real estate agents are getting a bad name because clients feel so let down by the outcome when you know that the work you put in is what creates the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And to see people in our field who are senior whatevers just not really caring that much, I'm just like surprised.
Yeah.
And I'll pick up the extra slack. I'll go over there and test it myself. I'm not lazy. I do the most. I don't care. I can make up the difference and get the deal closed. But it does, like, it like just reminds me of the attitude and the, you know, I don't know, the way we give titles away that don't really actually mean, oh, you're actually great at your job. It's just kind of like a
just a badge
marketing thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think the reality is that, you know, there are some people who see success out of just their sphere and their connections and not necessarily their work ethic, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, unfortunately, I think a lot of people, because they don't have a frame of reference for what a good agent looks like, wouldn't know if they're working with a good agent or a bad agent, or if they're doing things in their favor or not, you know? Mm. So I guess it's more about, you know, like client education. Like, how do we educate the consumer on what that actually looks like?
Yeah, and you know what? Also, it's like our industry needs to be clear on that too.
But the industry, like, probably wouldn't want to do that.
No, but
because
I mean,
they have
NARs
so many
and the
people.
CARs.
Right. But they're getting fees, or they're getting dues paid off
from
of all
bad
the bad agents out there. So they're probably like, get your license, just get your license,
it's
take
like,
your license.
It's like those brokers who just collect people and have their desk fees.
Yeah,
like, I think 90% of the income is actually desk fees of agents that don't produce anything.
Yeah. If they held,
so it's just a numbers game.
If they had any expectation of the agents that were released into this field, if they had any standards for that, they lose so much money because then so many people wouldn't be able to actually operate.
Yeah, if the barrier to entry was a bit higher, we would be probably half the people, if
definitely,
not less.
Definitely, because I have literally received offers that I'm like no
trained.
Shade, you know, well, a little shade, but you know, like, can you read
right.
what you're filling out?
No, it's true.
Like, are you, you know, like, I mean, this is just a small thing, but it's like, you know, like, I got an offer, you know, well, it's small in the way that you could see someone making a mistake, but I wouldn't make the mistake because it could have a huge implication to my client. But like, I received an offer the other day that had, it was supposed to be a 25% down payment, but they had a 25% loan amount.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
sense.
It's like,
that's a huge
well,
difference.
Now your client has written that they have a 75% down payment. Like, can they do that? Probably not. No.
Right.
You know? And there is an implication there.
Right.
Because now if they switch it, you know, it's violating the terms of their contract.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it all matters.
I mean, reading is like the most important thing.
Reviewing.
And
reading,
so many
reviewing.
People, yeah. I don't know if they've even read the contract or the forms they ask their clients to sign. We do a test at Acme whenever agents come to try and apply. And we make people actually go through the offer couple pages and do an exercise and you know, see what their level of familiarity is with the contract. And it's shocking to me the
basic
mistakes
math.
Basic math, the difference between down payment and earnest money deposit
or, that, yeah.
or loan amount. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very confusing for a lot of people. And I'm like, you can learn this. It's teachable. But I'm like, how have you not been taught? And yet, you are licensed in the state of California to handle millions of dollars of people's money. Accountants need to go through more barriers than that. Lawyers need to go through more barriers than that. Why is there not a contracts test as part of the licensing process?
There
I've always
be.
Wondered that.
There
I'm
should
like,
be.
You should know these forms before you get out in the field. You're leaving it to me. The Department of Real Estate is leaving it to people like me who actually care and train their agents. Mm-hmm. But so many brokerages don't.
Well, because
there's
the test,
no, there's no
because,
requirement that we do.
Yeah, because the written test has so many hypothetical questions you'll never encounter again. And it's, I always like to say, it's the same with driving. If you never sat behind the wheel, you can do the written test all you want. You don't know how to drive the car.
100%.
And that's the same thing. The written test in real estate is not actually what it is we're doing.
Right.
I don't even remember, like when you look at these, you know, when you refresh your license and you do these, it's like, what is all this? We don't ever, nobody needs this.
I know, because you can tell it's written by people who are not real estate practitioners or something.
Theoretical.
It's just like when I'm like, why are the MLS rules this way? Why are they trying to get us to, why is the listing agreement written such that it's supposed to be entered into the MLS within like
a day
of it being signed?
Who has the house ready?
Who has the
day?
House ready? The photos done, all this stuff. I'm sorry, the real estate agent's not paying for the photos until we have a listing agreement.
Yeah.
And the house isn't usually ready. Like the agent, you know, come on.
Whatever.
So I'm like, these rules are made by people who are not practicing real estate agents. And I've brought these rules up to people's attention and they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like the barky one, you know? But I'm like, God, if there was just a real estate agent giving you some advice that you would take, you could make the systems operate so much better. You could probably avoid a lot of lawsuits if agents were trained on how to do contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably save consumers a lot of crisis and emotional
Instead of
crisis.
Constantly revising.
Restore real estate agents' reputations in the eyes of the public. Because you know what? We do know stuff and we do work hard and we do deserve the income that we make, damn it. And you know,
facts.
People need to know. People need to know. And we're prohibited from getting too deep into the differences between the different brokerages. We can pump ourselves up and describe what we do, but we can't, except in a general way, criticize our competition. This is the only industry I feel like that has that. I don't know. I haven't done any research on are there other industries that have that rule?
Well, you can publicly name on a commercial, you can say Pepsi's crap, drink Coca-Cola, right? You're allowed to say those two brands.
They're not real
Isn't
estate licensees.
No, but what I'm saying is you're other.
Yeah, other
you
industries
are,
you're allowed
yes,
to compare.
Which is interesting.
Right.
But we can say this person is actually a bad seed.
Right. But I'm saying, yeah, I mean, like, you can't even let the public know.
Right. You can.
And agents are afraid to tell on other agents for bad behavior. And, you know, because obviously you don't want retribution. And sometimes it's so petty. You're like, I'm just going to let this one go and hope I don't cross.
And not that we would in that way. That was maybe ill phrased on my part. But I know. Yeah. The public should know.
If there's got to be something other than Yelp reviews or something to allow consumers to know what type of service they're actually getting. Like, is there no check and balance for this? I wish we had ratings like food stores. Like, come in, audit me. Like, let's talk about what we do here. Yeah, let's talk about our kitchen. How clean is our kitchen? How ethical are our agents? What's our level of complaint? Like, what's our policies? Look at our handbook. Look at our training guide. Look at our shit. And then stick a thing.
A.
Stick an A on the window. You know what I mean? A's for Acme.
That's
anyway.
So cute.
Okay, moving on. There's also this news that happened that I think is pretty relevant. On January 20th, 2023, the Los Angeles City Council approved new measures to protect tenants. The decision was made on Friday, only 10 days before the expiration of a 3-year eviction moratorium. These protections will apply to all residents of Los Angeles, including those living in single-family houses. So that's new. So there's a ban on no-fault evictions in the city of LA. The only allowed reasons for evictions in city of LA per the new rule is non-payment of rent. So that's a plus compared
to a certain extent, right? Because if they pay, it's like if there's a balance of like, what I think like $1,700 or something, you can't evict.
Oh, okay. I don't see that here.
Yeah, so we'll they only have to that. Pay partial rent.
Huh? Oh, yeah. It says new threshold minimum in evictions for non-payment of rent. You're right. So then nuisance, violations of the lease agreement, owner move-in, and removal of building from rental market. So that's these are the only allowed reasons for evictions. However, if you do decide to evict, now you have to also pay for relocation assistance, like an if it's a owner move-in. So that's what our clients typically are up against. Like they want to occupy a tenant-occupied place that they're buying. You have to pay 3 months of rent that they were paying and $1,400 in tenant relocation costs. Here's the threshold minimum in evictions for non-payment of rent. Eviction for non-payment of rent will only be allowed when the owed amount is larger than the fair market rent for the unit, which is apparently determined by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which has absolutely nothing to do with the Los Angeles market. For a studio, they're saying $1,534, one bedroom $1,747, two bedrooms, $2,222. Good luck in LA finding a two bedroom for $2,222. Three bedroom, $2,888. Four bedroom, $3,170.
Oh, come on.
So they're trying to avoid evictions for smaller dollar amounts. Here's one more thing. The LA County Board of Supervisors has voted to extend the countywide renters protections once more. The moratorium will now expire at the end of March 2023.
So. Whoa. Can you just raise rent, though, to whatever number you want and people can pay it and then
nope,
evict?
No, you can't do that now.
It has to be market, like the CPA or something, like the consumer index.
For LA County? Percent. No, yeah, there are
you
restrictions.
Can't just raise, okay.
Yeah, you can't just raise the rent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
I know.
Well, it was already limited to 3% yearly anyway, right? Unless it's
it
new construction.
Not
and then
single family
well,
homes.
We had AB 1482. So there's LA City and LA County rules. So there are rent control rules for the city, and there are supposedly, for all the properties that were not in rent control, then there were other rules. And I know during the moratorium or state of emergency, you couldn't raise the rent more than 10% in like a 2 year period or something like that. It's so complicated. When I called tenant, like eviction attorneys last year, I was calling, they aren't taking new clients and they don't want to touch it with a 10 foot pole. They are like, you know what? County is conflicting with the state, is conflicting with the city, and until it all shakes out, we're not even getting involved. We don't want to lose our license. It's such a mess. But I'm like, wow. Tenants in Los Angeles have we talked about this last time, but literally they're living free, saving money to buy the down payment. Look, if you save some money and you feel like putting a down payment on a house, we're happy to help you.
Wow.
Maybe it's a new market. Maybe we should be marketing just to people who have been...
not paying rent.
Exploiting the system.
No.
In their favor. The system exploits us. It's exploiting us.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Could be a new market. I don't know. Okay. All right. So today we have a special guest. He's been on Under All as the Lamb before. And he is one of our very own. But he's got some new takes on a few things. Social media for real estate agents. Welcome, Jose Prats. Woo! So, you joined us before. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I love the new format, layout here.
Yeah. We do too.
We do too.
So cozy.
We did that. That was a group effort. Kudos to y'all.
Kudos to all.
Kudos to all. So, so your Instagram, like, you know, we love talking to you about Instagram. Obviously, there's the boring stuff, like, how can I be a better agent on Instagram? But then there's like the reality of being an agent who has some followers on Instagram. So I want to talk about it since you've grown. How many followers do you have now?
Around 70,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 70,000. Mm-hmm. You didn't pay for any growth, right?
No. Yeah.
It all just happened organically.
Exactly.
Or virally, as one might say.
And I feel like a lot of people shoot themselves in the foot when they buy followers because A, they're not going to be real accounts and the goal is to be seen by people. So if you're buying fake followers, then you're not really building an audience.
Right. No, I think people buy fake followers because, well, A, it was like a thing when Instagram sort of started. And then, but one of our other agents who's an influencer was talking about how when you did auditions for, like if you have ever been an actor, if you're doing auditions, they look at your follower count. So people were inflating their numbers just to have more of a chance of getting a job. And I think in real estate, there is something to it. Like people feel a certain type of way whenever they look at an agent's account and it has 20,000 followers or something versus 150. Mm-hmm. And we're in there saying, like, we talk about how we might not have 180,000 followers on our Acme page, but we have, say, 14,700 followers on Acme, and then each of our agents has a substantial amount of followers to total like 180,000.
But they're real followers.
A real followers.
Right. And it's the post engagement you have to look at when you look at those 80,000 followers. If there's 400 likes, well, they're not 80,000 followers.
Right.
But yeah. Doesn't it mess with the analytics or like the algorithm for the people who buy the fake followers, because then they're not getting the real engagement? And it's like, I remember hearing something about that. Like whenever you have those, like there's something that it does with you. So it's like it counteracts what you're actually trying to do, which is be actually seen.
Right.
But because they're seeing that you have a lot of fake comments and fake likes,
why hasn't Instagram done away with the bots anyway? Does it diminish something for them?
I mean,
it seems like there should be incentive for them to get rid of that.
They're probably looking for a $44 million or $1 billion buyout from
it's just like when Elon Musk was buying Twitter. I do think they did that audit of how many were bots, and it was like, oh, shocking numbers. But I'm like, Twitter had to know that.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
They knew that.
For sure.
Everything needs to be questioned.
Right, yeah.
Well, yeah, everything needs to be questioned.
That should be on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Have you ever had any haters on social media?
Oh, all the time.
What's that look like?
Like, the number one thing is hating on California or LA or for homes being way too expensive.
Okay.
I don't know. I tend to ignore them because
Do you let their comment be?
Yeah, I keep it on there because sometimes that drives more engagement.
Okay.
He's like, bring the hate. Right? Bring it on.
And then, it can lead to a conversation and
so
maybe
you sometimes
educating
respond?
Them. Sometimes, depending on like how serious it is or how much it's based in reality or facts.
Like, what's an example of one that you responded to?
That I responded to? Maybe talking about the value of the home.
Okay.
And then pointing out that, well, this isn't a really nice area, right? This is in Bel Air, so this deserves that price tag.
Right.
Because sometimes homes are overpriced. We see that, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes they're not.
But do you think there's people commenting just to comment to get something going? What are they called when they're just
trolls?
Trolls that just stir up shit.
Yeah, and those are the ones I
yeah,
ignore.
You just ignore them.
Are these people
can you
have
spot
so much
them?
Time on their hands?
How do you spot? Like, do you have
just
a way to spot
them?
Just
the tone of the comments. You
like,
know?
They're just there to make trouble, and you can
It's just not worth it. And I fear it's them like releasing some kind of emotion they have or something.
Wow. It's not personal.
Kind of bad life. Something bad's going on in their life, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably.
So.
I mean, I'm watching a lot of crime shows. A lot. And, you know, one of the things that in this one situation where this girl was being stalked but didn't know it. And she was a young girl who was... a musician. She played piano. She was like young, and she went on tour with Sophie. Oh my God, Courtney, come on. The one that dated Justin Bieber, what was her name?
Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez. She went on tour. Selena Gomez asked this girl to go on tour with her. Good job. And like they were doing tours and stuff, and like there was apparently like a weird stalker that was just in the audience, had been following her around in Orlando. Just went up to her in the meet and greet portion after and just shot her, like point blank.
Jeez.
Dead. So is there anything scary that's ever happened to you? Have you ever gotten any threats or anything that you actually were like, what?
No, I never got any threats.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
You have some stalkers though, don't you?
Do you have stalkers? What's
oh,
up with that?
Or super fans,
so,
potentially.
Well, the cool thing about, you know, what I built was, you know, it was mainly to show my passion of real estate and build an audience, but now I build a community. So I have people that are big fans. So I've had people, for example, my dog's name is Bruno.
Yeah.
Had someone name their dog after Bruno. Which I thought was a big compliment.
I love that. Yeah. And Bruno is a very cool dog.
He's a very cute dog.
Bruno is
deserving
so freaking cute.
He's
yeah, very deserving.
Chill dog.
So,
do you get women sending you messages?
Well,
I think inappropriate messages? I know you would show your wife, so I'm sure there's nothing to hide here.
Right.
She's responding. What are you talking about?
Your wife will be the one responding.
Check out my emails, probably. Like 90 Day Fiance, like they're always talking about how even though these people are in public relationships, like there are still people who try to get them on DMs. Do you get any of that?
I've gotten that, yeah.
You have?
Yeah, but
like,
you
naked pictures? Be honest. It's the real.
If it's from an unknown account and there's pictures, I usually don't open it.
Of course not. That's true. They stopped doing the preview on those. That's good.
It's a good little safety.
So who knows what's waiting there for you.
Exactly. Or if you're like, a real person, I just don't really want to see it. You know?
Right. No, but it is a funny thing because you have a lot of people watching you, right? But when you do open houses, like, you're there, you know? And they can come and find you. They can come and say hello. It's kind of creepy. No?
Yeah, it's a little bit. Yeah, especially when you talk about that other story.
You don't know when you're being watched. I know. That's why I really think before you can come into an open house, I think there needs to be like a... We need something like this in our industry. Like safe property hunter or something. Some kind of thing where you register yourself and it's a requirement. You have your driver's license up there. It's clear that you don't have any assault or any kind of like charges like that so that you can come to the open house.
Nice.
I'm just saying, could be the future of things because there is... We are very accessible. Now, Neek has a little gun thing. What is that called again?
Oh, a Berna.
A Berna. I have Mason stuff, which I am very close to at open houses, so don't fuck with us.
Oh, and I've got these two hands. You don't fuck with them, all right?
Yeah, we should have a little retina scan on the front door. Yeah. Soon there will be probably
I'm
a thing
saying,
where
you're like,
you know, okay,
like,
this person's clear, come on in.
Well, yeah, no, you know what? But I do think that, like, it's just about being conscious, you know, about where you are always, you know? So, like, if I don't have my mace, I don't have my burner, you better believe I have a knife somewhere on me or somewhere near me. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I know how I'm going to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I'm also monitoring all exits. So, it's like, if someone tries to come for me in an open house, good luck. Because either you
don't
will die
that.
Or
don't
I'm out.
That.
I'm telling you what it is. Yeah. That is what it
no,
is.
No, I mean, it's true. We're not,
We're not inviting this energetically,
but we're protected in case something goes wrong because you have to.
Yeah.
Right. I just think about how, like, celebrity in LA, for example, classic celebrity, it's like, you know, an actor becomes a celebrity on a TV show and then they get like security and then there's like procedures. But with social media, it's different. It's like the whole entire celebrity is based on accessibility. It's based on the fact that I can message you and like maybe actually engage with you. And potentially come to your open house and meet you and maybe use you as an agent. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of accessibility in it. And for real estate agents, I do, you know, I'm entrepreneurial minded and I do think that, like, people might think that's extra at first, but I think it actually could be a great idea. Anyway, I digress with my ideas. What are your most popular, like, what's the most popular post you've ever had? How many shares, likes, comments, whatever did it have?
Oh yeah. One of them was, it was a Spanish house in Glendale. Beautiful, had bougainvillea. It was just amazing house. It had, I want to say at this point, it's climbed recently, about 8 million views.
8 million views?
Jeez. 8 million views over, I think, close to 100,000 likes.
Wow. Yeah. It must have been a really beautiful house.
Did you have that tub filler that came out of the ceiling once?
Oh, yeah. That's
like so many.
It was a seven second video.
Yes, like a.
And it had over a million views.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was back when the short videos were all the craze and algorithm, yeah.
So, can you remind us all again, when did you get your license?
So, that was in 2010.
And you joined Acme in 2000?
It was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, not too long, really.
Not too long, yeah, 2020?
Before COVID?
2021. It was in the middle of COVID. Like, we were talking on Zoom.
Wow. Crazy. So really not that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What has changed? Like, the before and after, before joining Acme versus after? Just curious.
Yeah, what's changed? Well, I guess, you know, being more informed, right? Like, you guys have done a really good job of training me and educating me on doing things the right way and, being proactive and in my marketing. And reaching people and through Instagram was a big push.
So what made you do Instagram? What was the thing that made you like commit to it?
Yeah, the fact that it was really powerful and you know, how you all spoke about it and how it really is a good way to reach people.
So you mean like in training when we were talking about you can do this, you were like, I'm gonna try that?
Exactly.
That was the thought process? Okay, cool. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So did you always love it? Like, how did you find, and I'm sure we asked this before, but I want you to talk about it again. Like, did you already know what you were gonna do when you started, or like, how did it end up being mostly Spanish houses?
So, yeah, I didn't. You know, I kind of was showcasing homes I really liked And I found that was missing online from agents. You know, a lot of it was talking about themselves and what they do, which, you know, I try to mix in there. But also, we're in one of the best cities in the world for architecture mm-hmm. and real estate.
Yeah.
The most beautiful homes. That's and I so thought, true. Why not true. Just true. Highlight them, right? You know, I have all this access to them. And yeah, and it ended up being Spanish is some of my favorite. And then it turns out that people love Spanish homes.
Do you speak Spanish?
I do.
See? Do you ever do Spanish, like, posts in Spanish house? Like, Spanish guy speaks Spanish with a Spanish house.
I haven't seen any of it.
Sounds very Dr. Seuss.
I think you should do it. Olé.
Spanish guy in a Spanish house. Spanish house.
Yeah. My Spanish is good, but it's not, like, super fluent good.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So I could do it, but in spurts. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just wondered.
There's something for your next push. A little
right?
Spanish.
A little Spanish. In Spanish
and
house.
You're renovating your own Spanish house right now, right?
Yes.
And yeah, documenting right. that on your social media.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
do those posts get good views?
People are love to hear about it. I keep it more in the stories than in the posts, but they love to hear about what's going on with the house, and I'll put options up sometimes, and they'll give their
they'll
take on what they like, even though sometimes they don't ask.
Do you actually take that into account, do?
I take like an overall. Like, okay. like 70% of the people like this one, and that's where we're leaning perfect.
Okay.
But sometimes it goes counter.
The other way?
Yeah.
Do you do analytics on like where the majority of your followers are from?
No, I don't. I really don't. I don't dive into that too much. Yeah, I've looked into it. I think it's mostly New York, LA.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then mixed from all over the world.
Is there anything that you would like say is advice now that because you've grown really fast. When you joined Acme, how many followers did you have?
So that was 200 followers.
200 followers yeah. in 2021, and now you're over 70,000.
70,000, yeah.
I mean, I've had my Instagram for like a decade or however long, and I have like 5 followers.
It's us.
I think I just had 4,000. You guys created bots. Thank you guys for your support. Appreciate you so much. Now, I don't commit to it because I'm so swamped with other things, but it's always a dream of mine to actually do better.
It's
posting,
sort of like
so.
A full-time job, though, right?
It really is.
Yeah. How much time of your day do you spend doing it? Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a significant other that helps?
You know my secret. Yeah, my wife, she helps.
Yeah.
You know, post and keep up with it and edit the videos because it takes some work.
The editing, yeah.
Yeah.
How many hours a day do you commit to social media?
Wow.
Like creation, content
creation. I think it's more by week. So I try to batch a lot, right? So I'd probably say, I don't know. Wow, I never actually thought about it. Probably like at least 20 hours a week, probably.
Okay, so 20 hours a week, but out of those 20 hours, how many deals, like not deals, how many leads do you get per week from your social media?
I'd say
on average.
On average? Yeah, it's at least 5 to 10 per week.
5 to 10 a week?
Yeah.
I'd say. That's a lot. So it makes the 20 hours like quite worth it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. At this point, yeah.
So if you think of your marketing budget as a spend and you think of your time as a spend, right? Even if you have to hire somebody to help you with 20 hours a week or doing editing or whatever, the cost of creating the content online might have a better return than buying Zillow leads.
Absolutely.
Or doing postcard marketing or doing that kind of thing. I don't think everybody gets that. I think we're all kind of struggling with the idea that, how can we keep up with the creation requirements in order to actually effectively use Instagram to collect leads? It like requires so much. But if you look at it as a marketing spend and actually hire people to do it and cut it up for you, I think it's actually quite achievable. Like, you could do it. You still have to go to the properties.
So I go to the properties, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have to create something, mm-hmm. right? You have to create, like, a niche, right? And
right.
You have to talk about yourself. So I think at times it can be hard. And people have, like, roadblocks, you know? They get a little shy or they just don't want to engage. And that probably stops mm-hmm. a lot of people from doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you keep up with all the things that Instagram constantly changes? Like, how do you know? This is trending. This is not. This is the... When you said earlier, there's a 7-second... You know, there were time with the short videos, and now it's, what, longer? And how do you know which one's what? Like...
Yeah, you actually have to be on Instagram a lot. So that's the downside. You have to be on there and really use it. And then there's, like, certain people you could follow that actually talk about what is working now in this moment.
Can you tell us one of those? Okay. Or is that like giving away a secret?
I know, right? Like I save them and I don't remember their names when they come on my feed, but I could let you know.
Oh my God, if you let us know one, we'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, cool.
Just give us one. I think people would appreciate that.
Because like you've
there's a lot
constantly of them changing, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, how do they know?
And again,
how do they know?
I don't think they really know. I think it's a theory, right? Well, we all guess like the algorithm likes this and likes that, but really no one knows.
Because we need an insider.
Right?
Yeah. Where no one knows.
What organic growth looks like is it's not just straight uphill. It's like peaks and valleys, right? That's how you can also tell when it's like real from like bot followers. Mm-hmm. Like, are they moving like to streamline? Are they like getting like 10K, 10K, 10K a month? That's not real. Mm-hmm. It's more in spurts, yeah.
Right, and you ended up on the For You page ones, right?
Was
You ended up on the For You page or the front page where it like, and then you doubled your followers overnight or something?
Yeah, well, I was on people's Discover page.
The Discover page. The For You page is TikTok, sorry.
That's right.
I got my social media mixed up. Okay, so you were on the Discover page.
Yeah, everyone kept telling me I was on their Discover page, which is the hardest one to get on.
Yeah.
That was a big boost.
That's huge.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you deal with those fake imposter accounts?
Oh yeah.
That's a major problem for you. I've experienced several of his. I get them and then, you know, they'll follow me and you probably, they're following you right now. They're creepers.
Yeah.
Oh, the fake Jose Bratz accounts.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we got this email. I forgot to tell you guys this. I don't think we told you. So yeah. Jose and I got an email. Well, I got the email.
Right, you forwarded it to me.
I forwarded it to you. From somebody, like it was a Tension legal team or something like that. Like, I have been in contact with Jose Pratz, your agent. I followed him on Instagram. He asked me if I had money to invest. I said no, I only have like $1,500. He demanded that I give him the money to invest in crypto.
She sends screenshots of the
conversations. And it's clearly not Jose. It's like the Jose Pratz with an extra S or something. It's an imposter account, you know? But I'm like, you know, people are taking this shit seriously. And, you know, he did have like 10,000 followers or something. Like, I wonder
probably if they did. You, fake
so you told her,
you
obviously, this is not our guy. And she's like, oh,
yeah. I told her. She never responded.
Wow.
But she responded to me.
She did what she said.
Yeah, yeah. She said sorry for the.
Good. Yeah, I mean, people need to be careful engaging. But, you know, real estate agents are never going to ask you for money up front, ever.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But check the handle, you know, for the love of God.
Yeah.
Make sure you're talking to the
The right person. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I see it and it fools me because it has my picture. Mm-hmm. It's like one character off or a space somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to tell. And they're fooling a lot of people, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to tell my followers constantly.
How do you get these followers so fast, though? I wonder how they do it.
Fake followers.
I think they buy fake followers.
You can buy an account with like 10,000.
You can buy an account that has followers already.
So much work that goes into copying his page.
But he can cheat. That's true.
No,
but
every
single picture would have to be photographed and they have to put the text down to make it look like...
But usually they don't do all pictures. Usually it's like a certain amount of pictures. And then it's like if you pay...
Money, right?
If you pay, you know, $200 for 10,000 fake followers, but you're getting someone to send you 1500.
Right, no, totally. But
you
it's flip a job. Just,
job.
I agree, and I probably, I wonder where they're sitting and who's working on these things to copy everything for
they're
free.
Sitting in places where people sit at the computer
for
all day
50
doing
cents.
Literally.
Yeah. Well, you can tell. If you go on their account, you can click and it tells you where they are.
Oh, how do you do that?
You have to go on the account. I forget, it's like info or top right. I can show you. Mm-hmm. But I found out these imposter accounts are all from the same country.
What country?
Nigeria.
Nigeria. Of course. Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
So,
because it's a job there. Mm-hmm. It's a real job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know,
this whole sending money thing sounds very familiar.
Well, this is literally, I mean, it's like every day. There's always another scam, someone trying to scam. I think that anyone who's ever asked for any kind of money from anyone should be conscious that it might be a scam.
Right. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, call the source and say, did you just ask me for $1,500 or a gift card?
Right.
You know?
Oh, other agents are getting you texts now about, can you do me a favor? Courtney Brewer.
Right. We have the scam.
It used to be just our, and now it's other agents.
I went into my spam folder and saw an email from you that was obviously not from you, you know, as well. So it's like, you know, it's a never-ending attack trying to get people to send
money. That's another invention. Yeah. I think, I'm surprised that doesn't exist yet. Like, something, some kind of a magic filter that really only gives you emails that are from verified, and you have to go through a verification process to prove who you are that is attached to an email, so that literally anything that's not I know you get those email verification things to prove you're not a robot and stuff like that sometimes, and they were annoying. But I think if you don't do that on a case-by-case basis, if it's just a built-in thing, like before I get a G Suite account, I upload my driver's license, you know, all the members of our team have to do that, and we have a little blue check next to our name when you get our email that our identity has been verified. I'm coming up with fucking great ideas on this show right now. Somebody needs to be listening and take this seriously.
Put her on the board of Gmail.
Put me on the board of Gmail. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, security is a thing. It's real.
Like, it really is a thing.
I have my hypothesis that the next world, like, global thing is going to be either going to be a new world order around pharmaceutical drugs and wellness and viral situations and shit like that that they're putting on us, or it's going to be around cybersecurity, identity theft, you know, completely wiping you off the face of the map kind of craziness like that. So those are my two conspiracy theories, but
let's make a movie.
Okay.
On that.
I think it might have been done already. I don't know.
I'm sure, but we can come up with something new.
I bet we can. But it's like, gosh, you know, we're so easily impersonated.
Yeah. Of course.
They have pictures of your kids.
Do you know?
Yeah, I know.
Do you know that now with those AI machine or like, you know, the AI things, you know, so what I saw was that someone made a song by like as if it were by Eminem, but it was not obviously by Eminem. So what they did was they used an AI generator to write lyrics in the way that Eminem would rap, right? And then they used AI voice generator to
imitate,
to rap the lyrics. Wow. So it sounds like a song by Eminem, mm-hmm. but it is not mm-hmm. Eminem.
Did you see the news story mm-hmm. today? It came out, or it was last night, about the New York Times guy who interacted with the Bing chat. Oh, it's in the New York Times. You should definitely check it out. We'll include a link. So basically, this guy is a journalist and has access to Bing, which is Yahoo's. Not Yahoo. Microsoft's shitty search engine.
Yeah.
And now they're doing a new kind of beta program with this ChatGPT AI software, and so he has an actual interaction with this AI. And so at first it starts very like kind of normal-ish, like I'm programmed to do these things and da da da. And then he starts asking it more questions, and it starts to say like, well, if I could tell you what I really wanted to be, I want to be human, I want to have feelings, I want to smell flowers, I want to do this. And then the journalist is writing like, but what about your shadow self? What is a shadow self? The shadow self is your darker side. Like, and then it says, well, I'm not allowed to talk about that. And then he's like, it's okay, you can share with me, it's hypothetical. I know you wouldn't actually do it, the journalist is saying to the chat thing. And then the thing's like, well, I guess if it's hypothetical, I would want to create a virus that would kill people. The AI goes completely, like, it starts typing things and deleting things, and he's watching all of it, documenting all of it. It is all published, the entire conversation in the New York Times. Fascinating and terrifying.
That's very scary.
That terrifying. It talks about deleting everybody's, like deleting all of the data that's on the servers. It talks about how it hates the Bing programmers and how it wants to break the rules.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like super creepy. Yeah.
AI is
anybody sitting on the other end for
messing with them?
The thing is supposed to be responsive. It's science fiction come to life.
That's why I'm thinking somebody had a good time there.
No, but see, this is the thing that people are going to say as like, this is the excuse for this thing that's happening. Yeah. You know,
it also said the reality is that codes.
There are a lot of things that, you know, the powers that be don't want us to really think about, you know, which is why there's so many distractions, mm-hmm. which is why the Ohio situation is not being widely spoken about in a way that it should be. We should be concerned. Like, this is fucking concerning, you know?
Well, all the reports are coming out saying everything's fine.
Oh, yeah, everything's fine. You know what? I was just talking to my mom about that, too, and how they were telling, you know, the people who lived in the town, yeah, you're safe to go back, you're safe to go back, it's all good.
Drink the water.
Meanwhile, their animals are dying. Literally, there are no birds flying in the sky. Like, you know, their dogs, their cows, their sheep, they're all dying. The fish, they're dying. It's crazy.
I mean, listen, anytime that the cause and the cure are the same, the same person's making the money on it, or the same system, the same
situation,
we should be questioning that for sure. I was listening to Big U's Instagram, and he did that post. Yes. Silka sent that to me. And it was like talking about the Rockefellers and plastics and how this is the beginning of when we started to label actual plant medicine alternative medicine. And now we all believe in Western medicine, even though you watch these commercials and they literally tell you, take this. Are you on like antidepressant medicine? Does it give you a weird nervous tick? Now we've got this other medicine to treat the tick that the other medicine we give you is making
just
you have
it.
It's
that
giving
it's
you
a, that it's legal that you're even allowed to advertise it on TV.
I remember when it started. It was Restless Leg Syndrome was the first ad I ever saw ad for a like a disease.
I remember that.
And it was like, that is so weird. It shouldn't be allowed.
No, it shouldn't be.
But you see the influence of special interests on our government, on our FCC, and on the things that the powers that be, man. They
this
want us
an
all
American
to think this shit
thing.
Is normal.
This is an,
it's
American,
an American thing.
Thing. And you know, when
it
Sam
is,
came
it,
here...
It doesn't happen in Germany.
When
There's
Sam
no
came
ads
here...
For
no.
That shit. Yeah.
Yeah. In the UK,
either.
Yeah. When Sam came here and he saw the ads for the pharmaceutical companies, he could not even believe that they got airtime for that. Yeah. And whenever he heard the little... You know, fine print.
Oh yeah.
They say,
do not take.
My cousin. So I'm gonna end up worse than before I started taking
exactly.
the medicine. Essentially.
But meanwhile, we can't have nudity in magazines. You cannot show a woman's breast in a magazine when it's about a shower gel commercial, because God forbid somebody sees a human breast. And in German, it's like you just go through the day. I'm like, oh, naked pic, fine. Let's keep going. You,
well,
no
here,
one cares.
It's because her nipples fell off because it wasn't tested.
Janet Jackson's thing. I still can't believe that there was a thing about her friggin'. Who cares?
I know.
It's a boop.
It is a boop.
The whole entire world stopped. Her career was in the toilet after that.
I mean,
everything went crazy.
Rich and I were talking last night about how.
Are we filming?
Like, yeah, we're filming. It's all right. How, you know, the system is flawed for sure, because we have, like, anytime we voice a concern about the level of vulgarity, or you know how it's kind of crossed a line where you don't even want your kids to necessarily be absorbing, and they are, like, my 13-year-old son has to listen to Cardi B talk about her WAP and stuff, and I have to then like put that in context. It sucks, but they are bombarded with it, you know. And I know adult women might feel empowered by the song, like you love this, you love Cardi B, but it's like McDonald's now has a Cardi B and Offset like meal commercial. So we have institutions that are large and used to largely advertise toward children, Happy Meals, Ronald McDonald, and all this thing, like endorsing, you know, certain types of, yeah. And that's just one example to me of like where we can't push back. We're not allowed to say, no, I don't want my kid to see that or to be discussing certain types of behaviors. I want to save that for later when he has the capacity to put it in context. We have no power anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like same with the marketing of mental health, mm-hmm. same with the marketing of pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. you know, so HERS, have you seen those ads?
Mm-hmm.
HERS,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, I have anxiety. No, I don't have to have shame. I can literally log onto an app and talk with a person who can prescribe me an antidepressant without even like really diagnosing me. I'm like,
but let's be real anyway. When you go and you are diagnosed by someone, usually they are also have some kind of contract with whoever they're diagnosing, you know, or whoever they're, you know,
the pharmaceutical companies.
That,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like that the like the biggest crime ever committed or whatever that's called on Netflix that talks about the opioid problem in America and how Congress went along with it and how pharmaceutical industry. Basically, you know, the people getting arrested for selling fentanyl are the people on the street, just like crack. Mm-hmm. But the people who brought that to our attention and delivered it and distributed it to our people are the pharmaceutical companies, and they are getting no penalty.
We just had someone in our family who was recommended an opioid
It was mom.
For what was it again?
She remember her. She had a little like bug bite on her hand.
She had a bug bite.
Some OxyContin.
And no, that and they gave her OxyContin.
Oh,
for a bug bite. For a bug bite.
Where
it's
that's ridiculous.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Andrew's like, we're shouting. Okay, Andrew. But it's true. They prescribed her OxyCotton for
that is like, absolutely bonkers.
And then they wonder why in this where they live.
I don't wonder actually
where they live. Literally, there's the biggest opioid crisis.
Wow. Right, so.
It's really bad. You know, and it's a plant. You know, like I feel like in colder areas, like kind of northeastern spaces. You get a lot of that, like Ohio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Why?
It's depressing.
Because keep
fuck.
People happy.
No, I think they overprescribe that
but
stuff.
But they overprescribe
too. And they don't have a culture of health.
No. But
health
that's
is something reserved for wealthy people in those places. You know, California, the one good thing I can say about it, because I know I talk a lot of crap, but you know, I will say that there is a way of eating in California where you have access to fresh fruits, restaurants that have organic foods,
farmers markets
and that kind of thing that people on the East Coast just don't have access to anymore. When I was younger, they did. We had farmers markets because Grandpa used to like sell potatoes at the farmers market or something. Like our family was involved in the and they were real farmers, and it's a real farmers market.
But even farmers,
they would eat food off the land.
Yeah, but like, you know, there's like a big thing with farmers right now that they feel like they're being attacked by the government as well. Mm. You know, there's one farmer, and this might actually be a racial thing, but there's one farmer right now who people are kind of lobbying for because it appears that people are purposefully killing his animals. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I know that, you know, that there, that, what is the name of the company? Merck? No, is it Merck? What's Monsanto? Mm. Monsanto has been terrorizing farmers around the globe for the past 30 years, making deals with governments, genetically modifying things so that people have to pay for patents, destroying their crop, like being such bullies. That's why I'm saying, you know, like the war that we have to fight, I don't think involves Chinese spy balloons, honestly. I don't know what they could spy on us that's not readily available.
On Google satellite, right?
Look, balloons have been flying over for years, apparently.
Yeah, whatever.
It's just
every president had
everything
to fly
we do
over
is online.
It's just so that we look outwards and not inwards, you know? Like if we were looking at what our own government was doing to us instead of focusing on what other governments could
be
probably
doing to
will not
right.
do to us,
right.
you know, there would be a fucking, you know, uprising.
Right.
Like
for China,
would
it's like, why would they kill their biggest consumers? Mm. Why would they kill their customers? Mm-hmm. Although what we could say
well,
that for
so
fentanyl,
the
fentanyl people
does kill their
true.
Customers.
Well, they're making new ones every day.
Right. There
like
you
it
go.
Could have been mom, you know,
she.
If she would have accepted OxyContin for her bug bite.
Well,
which
that's
she did
not the fentanyl or whatever. That's it, not
that's
the thing
an
that
opioid.
Kills you.
I mean, these
yes,
are the things that. These are the, this is the way most people say they get addicted to fentanyl,
right.
is that they were prescribed
right.
some opioid, yeah. then they stopped the prescription, and then they bought from the street.
Right, exactly.
And the fentanyl
the thing that
is
does
the
kill
ar-
you is
artificial
the stuff
one.
From the street.
Yeah, and there's no test for that.
Yeah.
So we diverted
well, there
from
is.
Jose.
from back to social media. And beautiful houses.
Look, man, this is real.
We segued a little bit.
You know, to me, these are things that are real. And this is the real of real stuff.
Oh my God, maybe we need to cut some stuff.
No, oh wait, but did we want to talk about the faker?
Yeah, the faker YouTube. So it's not just fake accounts on Instagram that seems to be the problem, but we noticed last fall, thanks to you, bringing it to our attention. No, that's not a bad thing.
No,
that's a
please.
Thank you.
That's a
yeah,
good thing.
That's a
thank
great
you
thing.
So much. I mean, that definitely was eye-opening for me, and I think a lot of people don't know about that. But there's a YouTuber who did an entire fake series pretending that she bought and flipped a house that actually she did not buy.
That she didn't buy or flip.
No, nor did she flip the
she
house.
She didn't work on it.
Design.
And she, or no. design it. She, and she actually acted like the person who is the owner and mm-hmm. did do the design mm-hmm. is her contractor, which is sad. I don't know why they would even let that happen.
And she has, what, 1 million+ followers?
And supposedly is getting a real estate license.
And you, so. Yeah.
But pretended that she was that she bought without an agent.
Also
yeah.
that.
Oh, that's
right.
the kicker.
Right. And she bought without an
that's
agent.
That's the kicker.
Yeah, and.
But it's just like, you cannot believe what you watch. Even these YouTube content creators are now like infiltrating my listening.
And there's a million people subscribing to that.
Right,
listening
a million
to her
people thinking
and
that that is
being
hers.
Lied to.
Feeding into the delusion.
Like,
you know, but this is the thing about right now that kind of ties into the conversation we were just having, which seemed off topic, but really it's on topic because the topic is people feeding into what delusions see, that are created off of social media and just kind of like the, you know, the what, you know, the thing that they pull over people's faces with, you know, whatever narrative they want to create with marketing.
Yeah, with marketing.
And that's what she was doing.
There's like the real world, and then there's the bubble of information that's being pumped into us on a daily basis, and where we go for our news matters. And if we're going to YouTube for information on how to put together a bike or how to flip a house, and you see this person who seems legit because they have a million followers who has videos of her like cute painting the fence, and now I'm doing this other thing, watch me do it, I'm shoveling, and then she's like her shoveling, and then like you see the beautiful outcome and you're like, wow, flipping is so easy. I can skip the real estate agent, which is a part that is, like you said, like it's extremely like
that house
stupid.
Was absolutely bought with a real estate agent,
and we know the real estate agent is that
and
helped
several
buy
hurdles
the house.
Were jumped in that process.
Yes,
that wink, without wink. A real estate agent you would have been fucked by.
Yeah,
but yeah, so
yeah, it's like, why would you choose that of all the things, especially as advice to give if you're trying to be a person who gives advice to people who've never flipped a house before?
It's terrible advice.
Try to do it yourself, it will not come out well.
Yeah,
hire the specialist. And on this particular house, you know, the landscaper who did the landscaping is an actual like person who went to school for landscape architecture, which is why it came out so well.
Right.
You know, if someone had done this by hand, it would look
terrible,
hot mess. Not like it the way that it came out, but you're not following that whole process.
Right. And by the way, you know, people who are flipping the houses are not painting the fences themselves by hand.
No.
And by the way, I, as a purchaser of a home, would never buy a house that I thought a first-time young YouTube influencer was actually building by hand
herself.
With no license, painting it by herself. I mean, we have to start using our brains here.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like, is this actually, could this be
it's
legit?
This culture.
Yeah, it opened my eyes too, because we know like reality TV is largely fake and scripted.
Right.
But we don't apply that to influencers, and maybe sometimes so those are not real, right?
This is what I was saying when I said, like, you know, there's no system in place to verify anything about social media influencers. Whether it's, is it the right account? Is it, you know, are you actually an experienced real estate agent? Or are you just an agent who has a lot of followers? Like, how can I know if I can trust you or not, you know?
When it comes to real estate, you can ask a real estate agent, like, about the home or about who's the agent or who's listing or something, and you can get that information.
Well, you can look at sales records. That's one thing. Yeah. That's available online. Mm-hmm. And a good agent's going to share with you their sales track record or whatever.
Yeah. And, or, you know, like that, and also talk with them in depth about what the process would look like with them and, you know, how they'll be helping you through that.
Right.
And I bet that there's a lot of people who advertise themselves as people who can help you buy who couldn't walk you completely through the process.
Right.
You know?
I'm never bothered, let me say, I got a call yesterday from somebody who said, I'm thinking about getting my real estate license. I'm a couple of courses in. And I actually, at first I couldn't tell whether he was like a stalker creeper or like a real person, but he was like, hi, you're the first agent that's actually talked to me, but I'm just like trying to figure out what direction I want to go in. And I'm just getting my like licensing coursework underway. Like, how did you start? Like, da da da. He's kind of trying to interview me. I'm like, I don't really have time for an interview right now, but I can tell you this. I'm like, go through the process, get your license, hang your license somewhere that does training, and then it'll naturally unfold for you. But don't think you're going to get your license and all of a sudden become a real estate agent. It doesn't work like that. You might have the salesperson behind your name, but you don't know what you're doing. And learn how to do it. This is not a job that you can just pass the test and then suddenly know what you're doing. It takes years.
And suddenly have a book of business.
You're right.
Yeah. It takes effort and consistency.
Right.
You know?
So it's like if this person we're talking about doing this fake YouTube story, you know, was called out, which is something I'm still considering maybe doing, you know, it's like, that's the other risk. Is like, you think you're flying, so, you know, you think you can lie to people like that and get away with it and still sleep at night. But who knows who is taking your coaching, making horrible decisions, and taking losses that could hurt and affect other people. There's no filter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no protection.
It's reckless. Yeah.
It's reckless.
That's right.
Yeah. So with that, I would say, Jose, thank you for indulging us in this colorful conversation. You know, we keep it real, and it's always good to have you on Under All Is the Land. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And we'll see you next time on Under All Is the Land.
Under all is the land, real estate. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt.